Next, Bothrop Spears Broadsides, 2.5 hours of Civil Rights for the Poor, Stuff on the Streets, and our special guest, the V-Man. Yes, he's heading for court, and he's heading into your radio. Stay tuned. Next 2.5 hours, he won't be there the whole time, but we'll have him
listen. When the plant lays me off for a hard luck streak, I take a job at a club, and I'm dancing for a week. It's the way to make a living, but the kids gotta eat, and I always seem to make my own way. You better take me as you find me. Just cause you find me don't mean you can't take me. If you can't take the way you find me, you can just leave me alone. I put a lot of living behind me. Seen some hard times, they didn't break me. You better take me as you find me, building my door and me alone. Driving home from the swing shift, I need a vacation. Cop pulls me over, one more aggravation. Let me see the license and registration. Pull up behind that building over there. He sticks his head in the window, starts making moves on me. Jump back, Jack, you know you don't scare me. I'd love to tell your story to some jury. Leave him in the dust, make my weary way home. You better take me as you find me. Just cause you find me don't mean you can't take me. If you can't take the way you find me, buddy, better leave me alone. I put a lot of living behind me. Seen some hard times, they will break me. You better take me as you find me, building my door and me a home. My pay stays the same, but my grocery bill's rising. Getting mighty weary of this free enterprise. Took the notion in my head, do a little organizing. So I start talking union to the people at the plant. The foreman says, sister, you're drawing your pay here. We ain't subsidizing no norm array here. I'll keep talking union as long as I stay here. I think we're gonna see it someday.
Yes, indeed. And you are tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM, here in beautiful, beautiful Santa Cruz. Not raining today, but winter is coming in, and El Nino should be making its frosty way down, or its weird way down, I guess. I'm Bathrop Spear Robert Norse, and twice a week, if you tune to this station, you'll get a show on civil rights for the homeless, folks on the street, just general civil rights for folks dealing with police and poverty issues. This show runs from 11 to 1:30, and on Thursdays we run from 6 in the evening to 8 in the evening. But today, we have two firsts here. For the first time, I have as my guest the Vicious Vinny, or the V-Man as he's known, one of Free Radio's stalwarts. Actually, when Free Radio went into eclipse, he was one of the few people who continued to fight on, work on. A lot of the responsibility for all the dreck you hear on the air now is his fault. So if you don't like this show, you can blame him. The second thing is that for the first time for at least on my show, and those of you who have been tuning into the radio know that it's been on for several days, but we have a phone line. Yes, our call-in capacity is back. So if you want to call in and be a part of this dialogue or just do your own monologue, heck, as long as I can tolerate it, you can give us a call, and the phone line is 423-5361, 423-5361. And it might be a little rocky today because this is my first time working with the new phone line, but I have this expert in the studio who's not only been battling the police in order to get a little free radio out on the streets, by the which I mean asserting his basic First Amendment rights and trying to get information about free radio out to you, and the police have made it a battle because when he puts up the free radio stand at Cathcart and Pacific, police come around and essentially attempt to eliminate that stand from the area through different subterfuges. At least it's happened twice, and Vinny faces two tickets in court. Let me introduce you to my guest. Sign in, Vinny.
All right, yo ho ho. This is the V-Man here. Like Robert was talking about, I've been harassed lately. Well, not actually, this happened about 2 months ago in September. was tabling on a beautiful Sunday afternoon downtown for quite a while, being very successful. We've got T-shirts now for Free Radio, and so we're out there trying to raise some money for some of this new equipment, like the phone line that we now have and the new mixing board that, you know, makes us sound a lot better. So, you know, I'm just out there trying to spread the word that we're back on the air and that we're not going anywhere. Selling, you know, not even selling anything, just, you know, asking for donations. People that, you know, have extra, little bit of extra money, they can throw it in the bucket. If they want to get a T-shirt, you know, it's free with a suggested donation of $5. So there we were, having a good old time for quite a while. Officers drove by numerous times, and, you know, they gave us the obligatory nod, you know, like, oh, hi, you guys, oh, okay. And so eventually, at some point, like hours into it, everybody that was hanging out at the table sort of, like, went about their own thing, and I was stuck alone, easy prey for Officer LeFevre. And he approached me with his ticket book in hand, and so I got, you know, I was like, oh, here we go. And he proceeded to write me a ticket for a display of merchandise. No, sorry, excuse me, a non-commercial display stand over 6 feet tall. And so we talked about it a little bit, and I asked him what law that was under, and he provided the municipal code section 5.43, I think. I'm not sure what subsection, but and he wrote me the ticket, and I asked him what would happen if I refused to sign the ticket. And he says, well, you'll be handcuffed and taken to the police station, and then you'll be talked to by a superior officer and urged to sign the ticket, or you'll spend the night in jail. So under that advice, I decided to write the words "fuck you" in the red box, at which point I was handcuffed and taken to the police station and given a good tongue lashing by Sergeant Watson. Now, I eventually did sign a new ticket that they wrote, because I was under the assumption that failure to sign a ticket was a similar charge to resisting arrest, and I'm on probation for that very offense. So I didn't want to fucking have to spend 60-90 days in jail for just writing "fuck you."
Let me interrupt here for a minute. A couple things I want to discuss, like the fact that the stand that you had been at, the table, was essentially a way of letting the public know about the existence of Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is of course the station you're listening to right now, and of knowing the schedule, learning about its history, and being able to support it through donations of money for T-shirts, things of that sort, and possibly even to join in and become a part of Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Exactly.
In a sense, not only are you engaging in a free speech activity, which any person has a right to do on the street in terms of just speaking freely about a cause or an issue, you are a channel of free speech in this community, because free radio isn't just a name, it's a reality on the air, and it allows and promotes folks to come on with kinds of messages that are not allowed on other radio stations, that you can't get out through the media because you can't be printed, your letters don't get printed, or you just simply don't have that kind of access. You used to say that freedom of speech, freedom of the press, is a fine thing in America for anyone who owns a press. How long had you been tabling in the few months prior to this ticket happened, what, in August or September?
September 9th, I think, yes.
September 9th?
Mm-hmm.
How long had you been tabling before? How many times had you been out there? Was this some sort of rare thing? Were you sort of throwing up some bizarre table that was blocking the sidewalk, and you were blocking the view of some merchant's window or something?
No, no. In fact, we used to table in front of the new building that's going up at Soquel and Pacific for years. I've been tabling with Free Radio for a long time, not every weekend, but on a pretty regular basis. This particular year, no, not as often, maybe as 1996, but, you know, we try and get out there at least once a month on the weekends to table. And this is nothing new to the police. They've had to deal with this before. Anytime that they stop by, you know, they always get into some sort of dialogue with the police, with us. And I've actually been harassed before by Officer Headley, and ticketed while tabling for having my bicycle parked against the fence along Soquel and Pacific in the planter box. And I fought that one in court and won. It got, you know, thrown out because the charge that he cited me for was planter abuse, and there was no evidence that I abused any plants in any way according to the law, so I was found not guilty.
I should point out, let me interrupt you just for a minute,
okay,
that the planters have been a key kind of excuse the police have used, not just after the downtown ordinances were passed in 1994, making sitting down on the sidewalk illegal and then sitting down on small planters illegal, but for years when there actually was a garden mall and it was a wandering kind of brick-laden thing where a lot of people came out and sat on planters during their lunchtime, police would harass people who were, should we say, raggedly dressed, minorities, folks who were homeless and poor, and other folks who'd come out of stores, and actually many people just would eat their lunches sitting down these brick planters that lined the mall, were left alone. So for those who don't know, it's not like Vinny here is, you know, there's some real legal issue involved. The real issue is, how do we get the police to stop harassing groups like Free Radio, groups like, well, Food Not Bombs is no longer being harassed because it, in essence, has been moved out of the downtown back into the town clock, which is, I guess, far enough away for the merchants to stop harassing it to some extent. But ordinary people on the mall, it should be noted, and you may have heard David Silva, Green Party candidate, Free Radio commentator on my show, and city council candidate who's also suing the city for police abuse. He does a regular tabling for the Green Party down on the Garden Mall, or I guess we might call it the former Garden Mall, on Pacific Avenue. And he has actually gotten from the police the word that they only go after the bad tables, the bad guys, that he's okay to table. It's okay for him to sell shirts and buttons or ask for donations. The idea of sell and ask for donations has always been one of those kind of, you know, iffy things. Nobody really makes a living selling anything out there. Political groups try to get money by selling shirts and buttons, but that's not like some major business. And they do so sometimes using the word donation, sometimes not. When I ran the so-called homeless table back in the late 80s, I sold the Street Shit Sheet, my homeless newspaper that put out, I'm not sure, 155 now. It hasn't come out for a while. And when police tried to confiscate it, demanding I have a business license, I told them, please do so. We'll take it to court. They never did. They threatened to. Now, apparently, that's a real threat. I mean, I had to think twice before saying that. If I were going to lose hundreds of dollars worth of T-shirts, as perhaps you would have been, Vinny, then I might not have done it. So anyway, you were saying, in this particular, this first ticket you got, you were told that this display was larger than 6 feet. Now, of course, this is an ordinance that came in 1994, mainly because of homeless demonstrations downtown, where there were three different displays for a total period of 3 weeks over a period of 4 years that were larger than 6 feet tall. There was a box that a guy lived in to dramatize the infamous sleeping ban, which we still have with us and which we're going to be fighting on the ballot, I hope, next November. But because of this, the merchants rammed through this special interest legislation which said you can't have a display more than 6 feet tall on the mall. I've never heard, of course, this being used against merchants who have large displays, and we know that city council members who tear down posters like Michael Hernandez get positive write-ups in the Sentinel. So there's clearly a differential process happening here. Tell us a bit more about what happened and what you think the relevant issues are here in this first ticket.
In particular, Officer Lefevre seems to have it out for Free Radio Santa Cruz, mainly because of one programmer doing a show one late night and having some very strong opinions about that particular officer. So strong, in fact, that I don't know, you probably heard the tape, but obviously Officer Lefevre did, because as I was being hauled to the police station, he mentioned something about that particular show and how he enjoyed it. And it was a guy basically on the mic singing a song about Officer Lefevre, and it was very homoerotic, to say the least, and I think he may have been a little bit offended. So I think this whole attack was very personally motivated for Officer Lefevre, and therefore he used the color of authority to give me a ticket and, you know, try and shut the table down, try and stop our progress, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that's one of the relevant issues. Another relevant issue is that, yeah, Free Radio does cover a lot of what the police tends to, how they behave downtown, how they treat people. And we don't give them positive media attention because, you know, we call it like we see it, you know. And if a cop does something right, you know, maybe somebody will come in here and say, you know, well, this cop did something right. But for the most part, the cops downtown only use these silly ordinances to exactly do that, harass homeless people. And I think it's a good point to mention, Robert was talking about this, the sitting law. If you walk downtown right now and you go by Zachary's restaurant, you will see everybody that is waiting for a table blocking the sidewalk, sitting on planter boxes. And if you call the police and say, I want this person cited, they won't do it. You know why? Because those people are going to go spend money in a business. And if a couple of so-called undesirables, you know, so-called riffraff, were to do that, same thing, maybe a block and a half away, you wouldn't even have to call the police. The police will find them and ticket them or use it to, you know, check them for warrants and find out if they have any warrants. And if they do, they're going to jail. And that's one of the main issues, I think, with me getting a ticket, is that we are out on the air definitely calling the police like we see it. You know, we're, like I said, we don't give them positive light, basically. And I think that that was very personally motivated for Officer Lefevre.
Yeah, I, interestingly enough, you bring up the name of Officer Lefevre. About a year ago, we had the two other officers Over and Eveleth, who had become kind of the bad boys of the mall through giving all kinds of harassment tickets, which many of which got thrown out, some of which didn't. Again, the point being to cattle herd people, and I use that phrase not as a sort of a kind of a colorful slander, but the actual words used by Sergeant Hennig to the Downtown Association in 1990 when he described how he treated homeless people downtown in order to keep them moving. So now we had, I guess it was this summer, we had Officer Lefevre and his companion, was it Officer Seeley? Seeley the Younger, we might say, not Sergeant Seeley, the eminence Sergeant Seeley, but Officer Seeley. I myself was so concerned about Officer Lefevre because I'd gotten so many reports through SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, which is a kind of a police monitoring group if you're interested in contacting SPAN. Get your pencil out and I'll give you a phone number soon. That I put out a survey. Actually, I put out a form for people to fill out if they had had problems specifically with Officer Lefevre, and I distributed this form. We actually got numerous people to come to a police review board meeting for the first time in its history. Well, for the first time anyway in many months. Police review board, by the way, meets tomorrow, for those of you who want to check them out, and I'll be talking more about that after this interview. The phone number, by the way, if you want to call in to Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's a new number, is 423-5361. Again, 423-5361. You can be on the air to join this discussion. Perhaps you've had some problems with police downtown. Perhaps you feel police are being unfairly maligned here and that they should be given some defense. Feel free to, or perhaps you have some other issue related to this that you want to bring up for the listeners to hear. Do call in at 423-5361 if you'd like. Also, if you have interest in, again, this police monitoring group, Stop Police Abuse Now, you can reach them at 475-2012. That's 475-2012 if you want to make contact with SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now. And finally, if you want to come to the Citizens Police Review Board meeting, which is happening tomorrow, and there is an opportunity during that review board, there had been an opportunity to make up to half an hour's worth of oral comment. I'm not sure if they're going to cut it back to 3 minutes. They tried that last month, and I ignored them and went on, continued to speak because I felt it was important, and I had issues I'd brought, and it was their previous tradition to have a long oral communications period. But there is an oral communications period. There is a once-monthly police review board meeting, and that is 5:30 Monday. It's the second Monday of every month, and next Monday, tomorrow, is the second Monday, and that's at City Hall, right across from the Public Library, 5:30 in the afternoon, Monday. Come and make your concerns known if you've been harassed by the police. Incidentally, if you file a complaint with the police, I know very few have, or with the Police Review Board, and all such complaints should eventually reach the Police Review Board, which is supposedly made up of citizens who oversee this, but actually have little power. You might want to make that complaint public at this hearing, because otherwise the police officer's name remains hidden away from the public, and even if you go into the police review board, they won't give you the name if you look at the files. So unless you make it public on their records at a public meeting, it remains secret, which is wrong, because police officers have to be responsible, and they are best made responsible by having complaints made public. and publicly aired. And if the individuals are in error or malicious, and very few are in this situation that I've seen, because it takes a lot of courage to file these complaints, then that comes out through the public dialogue. Again, the phone number here is 423-5361. You might want to give us a try and join this discussion. I'm talking to Vinny, Free Radio Santa Cruz broadcaster, civil rights activist on the streets, and just general all-around bad guy here. So you got this first ticket, and it's coming up for, it's an infraction, of course. It's only a $162 fine at maximum, but that's a lot of money for you and me, and that's it's also a form of fear and humiliation that all of us will have to confront potentially at any point from Officer Lefebvre. For instance, I myself am going to arraignment this week.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah. And you'll never guess who gave me a ticket.
Yes. Officer Lefebvre?
It was Officer Lefebvre, yes. Officer Lefebvre gave me a ticket when I was doing a cop watch,
wow.
Interestingly enough. And, of course, I've discussed this on the air for those regular listeners who remember. I was leaning against a green garbage can about 20 feet from where you got a ticket, although you got your ticket, I guess, on a different day. And what I was observing was that the officer was cross-examining a young person. And he didn't like the fact that I was cop-watching. I think that was his motivation. Or perhaps he just felt he wanted to make sure that I wasn't hurting the trash can, which, you know, it's a steel cylinder. One would think it could defend itself, but perhaps not. And I was leaning against it. He said, "You can't lean against that trash can." I said, "Well, as far as I know, it's legal to do that. You have an ordinance?" And he whipped out his code book, as apparently he did for Vinny, looked for an ordinance, couldn't find one. He actually found the ordinance, he thought, and he read it aloud. It said, "Sit, stand, or lie on," which is not leaning. I continued to lean. He said, "Well, I'm giving you a ticket anyway." So, Officer Lefebvre is a man who, he's pretty single-minded when he gets an idea in his head, and the question is, do you want that kind of an individual with a badge and a gun and the authority to bring people to court and put people in jail? That's really, I guess, the question that the community has to answer and the police department has to answer. But let's go back to your second ticket, Vinny. You were with Free Radio Santa Cruz, not content with giving you with this one ticket. I guess that you got a second ticket from a different officer, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, we're talking about the same police force. We're talking about your table in the same place, which was at Cathcart and Pacific, which has now, of course, become a kind of a construction zone. Wait, we have an incoming phone call. I'm going to have to take some coaching from Vinny on how to do this. You want to show me how to do it, Vinny?
Free Radio Santa Cruz, do you want to be on the air? Okay, hold on.
Okay, you're on.
Yeah, I actually just had a question about law that maybe you can answer for me. Last week I was walking down Pacific Garden Mall, and I was watching an arrest happen.
Yes.
Where the officer was handcuffing a whatever street kid looking character, and he was being rather aggressive with this person. I was walking with Gary, who's in a wheelchair, and I asked him what the charges were, and he very strongly said, "None of your business. It's none of your concern."
Mm-hmm.
And I said, "Well, I have a right to ask." And he said, "Well, I have a right to tell you none of your business."
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, what are the laws, or as a citizen, as someone interested in cop watch, what do I have a right to insist knowing about a situation that I'm not involved in?
Sure. I appreciate your calling in. You're the first caller that we have, so I want to thank you particularly. And I think that it really is important that people like yourself stop and observe what is going on with police officers. In answer to your question, the police officer, in a sense, is technically correct. He can claim that he is protecting the privacy rights of the person being arrested by not getting into the details of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
However, the person to address is the arrested person. This is what I frequently do. When I see someone being arrested, I say, "What are you being arrested for?" in a loud voice. "What are you being arrested for?" And if the person is hostile or bashful and doesn't want to get involved, they will make it clear to you. Then what I do, because I regard this as a public issue, it isn't really between the police officer and the individual. If the police officer is engaging in a pattern of harassment, I make comments to the surrounding public about what goes on. This may not be your style. What I do is, I for example, a person is being arrested for sitting on the sidewalk or given a ticket, I will start broadcasting, so to speak, in a loud voice. I will address the passersby. Here are your police, your taxpayer dollars at work. Here's a police officer spending our money on arresting someone, a poor person, for sitting on the sidewalk. Now, the key thing here is really to make up your own mind, I think. You have to find, kind of adopt your own style and whatever suits you best, whatever you feel most comfortable with, because everybody has their own way. But the police officer can technically say, I don't have to tell you anything. And that's true.
So an exchange between me and the arrestee would be completely legal. There's nothing that the officer could do to deny that person from speaking with me directly.
Yes, although you got to be careful that, I mean, he can always claim you're interfering with an arrest. That's what they will warn you. You're interfering with an arrest, step back, shut up, go away. But the reality is, one, you have a right to observe the arrest. Two, provided you're not, continuously and obviously interfering with the arrest, you have a right to direct an inquiry at the person. Do you need some help, sir? Would you like to give me your name and number? Do you need some help at the station? You have a right to make such inquiries, particularly if you make them in a loud, kind of polite tone. I don't think that, I mean, I do anyway, and I've never been arrested for anything of that sort, although police frequently leave me alone on these kinds of issues.
Okay, that's essentially what I wanted to know.
There are a couple other things that I've talked about in the past, which I welcome you to kind of stay tuned and listen to. Police officers regularly abuse their powers on downtown, and you're quite right to be skeptical about what he said. The fact that he's technically, right by saying that he doesn't have to respond to you. It's also true, for instance, that you can go down and get a copy of the police report, and that is one of your legal rights. They may charge you, for it, but you have the right to do that. But the key thing is address yourself to the person being arrested. And often the person being arrested will be afraid to talk to you because people feel ashamed and blame themselves when they're being arrested.
Yeah.
Rather than understanding that this is a process that affects all of us, that there's a general repression going on.
Yeah, well, it seemed to me that in that incident, there was a group of people that appeared to be friends of the person getting arrested and some other, bystanders that were watching in silence, and there was a tone of, whoa, stand back, don't know how to get involved, intimidation.
Mm-hmm.
And that seems to be the element of authority that the police maintain.
Definitely.
Other people's reaction keep them in power. And if they were just doing their job and people were comfortable with themselves in a situation, talking to each other, looking at the situation and vocalizing what's going on, then their power is diminished and they're forced into reacting in a different way.
Correct.
And so I think that's key.
And I think you contribute to that when you make inquiries, even if you are rebuffed.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's why that's very important. You can also make loud inquiries of other people.
Mm-hmm.
The reason I say loud is because the police tend to get embarrassed when they're engaging in these activities. They like to put them under the rubric of, say, drugs or something else, which, of course, puts off a lot of middle-class citizens walking by, although the drug war itself is a major attack on poor people.
On poor people.
That's what
it
is.
Right.
So I commend you, and I also encourage you to report this incident to SPAN, Stop Police Abuse Now, at 475-2012. That's Nick Whitehead. And just give a call to 475-2012 and tell whoever answers it. You have an instance of police abuse you want to bring up.
Uh-huh.
Or just a question about it. You don't have to prove anything. You just have to say, this made me uneasy, and tell them why you were concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. All right, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Good show.
Thank you.
All right. That's a really good point that, we do have that right to witness the police doing their job. They're public, they're public servants, and as members of the public that are paying their wage, we have that ultimate right. And like Robert said, the key is to not interfere physically and to try and keep at least a good distance of about 5 to 10 feet from the officer. And you shouldn't have any problems with the 148 charge, resisting, obstructing, delaying, etc. I've been threatened with that numerous times by numerous officers for exactly doing that, doing a cop watch and, asking the cops, what's going on, and they refuse to answer, and it's like, you know, go away, we'll talk to you later, and they never come and talk to you later, ever, and they just want you to go away and not draw attention to what they're doing. They want to quietly do their jobs and take these people to jail. So it's really a powerful thing when people stand up and question that what they're doing is as wrong. Like what I think that was Casey, what she did. It sounded like a wonderful thing.
It's also, I think, important what you did. And in the second instance, when you were tabling at Free Radio Santa Cruz and you got your second ticket, maybe you can briefly outline what happened there.
Okay, that particular instance, similar, it was about 2 weeks after the first ticket, citation, what have you. And it was, I was out there again tabling with the bike cart modified so it was not over 6 feet tall. And we had our T-shirts on display, and we had literature again. And this time, the officers, they kept trying to intimidate me. They would walk over and, like, act like they were going to, like, detain me and give me a ticket. And then they would just, like, turn away real quickly. And it was just, like, this whole mental intimidation trip that they were trying to pull, trying to scare me away, trying to just get me to leave. And I wouldn't. I wouldn't leave. And there was a lot of people around the second occasion. And Officer Eveleth came on duty at around 4 p.m. that day. And I'm sure you're all familiar with Officer Eveleth, badge number 193. And he, go ahead and you can answer it. And he,
Hi there, you're on the air with Free Radio.
What Christians would call the apocalypse.
Anyway.
Well, thank you for that call.
So, Officer Eveleth pulls up in his car. He had just come on duty. And he struts off over towards the table. And he at that point, there was numerous free radio programmers, propagandists, what have you, in the area. And he decided to detain me because he allegedly witnessed a transaction of money take place in where I gave a person a T-shirt and they put $5 in the jar. And so he felt that I was, quote-unquote, in charge here. And he detained me, and I asked him for what, and he said, for display of merchandise. And so, you know, I didn't really get into it too much with him. I was just kind of like, oh, here we go. He's going to give me a ticket. He starts writing the ticket. And there was a little bit of a dialogue there. But basically, he asked me what would happen if he wanted to take a free shirt. And I said, well, if you asked, maybe I'll give you one. But, you know, it's like I said, well, it's free with a suggested donation of $5. Oh, well, that sounds like it's for sale to me. So he keeps continuing to write the ticket. And this time I was not as rebellious as I was in the first instance when I wrote "fuck you." I just wrote my name this time. I didn't want to go, you know, through that whole trip of being handcuffed and humiliated and all that. So I signed the ticket. And the point I'm trying to get at is that we're continually being harassed. This time it was for a display of merchandise, right? So one would be led to believe that the ticket I originally got for a non-commercial display of over 6 feet tall would lead you to believe exactly that. It was a non-commercial display. We're not selling anything. We're not trying to make money. And then the second occasion, for the same activity, nothing different here, it was suddenly a display of merchandise, leading you to believe that it was something for sale. So eventually, I finally got the courtesy notice in the mail, and I went and signed up for court, which is coming up for me, arraignment, on November the 25th. That's a Tuesday morning. 8:30 a.m. in Department 1 with Judge Kelly. If anybody's interested, I urge you to come down and support me in this fight. I'm going to just be pleading not guilty, basically, and then I'll sign up for court date and have a trial, a monkey trial, court trial, with no jury, with no lawyers. It'll be me versus the officers, basically. And it'll prove to be interesting, I can assure you that. It will be a very entertaining trial for many reasons. I'm going to bring up selective enforcement issues. I'm going to actually maybe try and challenge the constitutionality of display over 6 feet. I'm going to maybe, I don't know, I have to really do some homework on this one, but, you know, it's definitely, it seems to me unconstitutional, an infringement of our right to display anything, you know, no matter how big or small, you know, in an area of a part of town that is a protected area for such activity. That being Hippie Corner, there's no business there. I wasn't blocking anybody's view to anything. So this 6 feet bullshit is exactly that. It's unconstitutional. It's an infringement on our First Amendment, and that's the way I feel about it. So if you're interested, I urge you to come to Department 1 on 8:30 8:30 in the morning on the 25th of November. That's a Tuesday. Department 1, Judge Kelly. And I'll be up for arraignment.
Actually, that'd be good for folks to support you. Also, if there are any attorneys present who want to give you some advice on this issue, I encourage them to give a call in to 423-HUFF. Give a call to 423-HUFF and leave a message for Vinny on that on the HUFF line. HUFF is an acronym for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, which is a civil rights organization concerned with rights for poor folks and folks who are being treated poorly. Let's face it. The other thing is, you should know that the arraignment is just that. You sit and wait in court for an hour and a half with a book, you plead guilty or not guilty, and they give you a court date. So it's even more important for you to be present at Vinny's trial,
yeah,
which will be probably a week later, probably in early December, assuming that actually that's they'll set a court date, unless, of course, there's a revolution before then, which I don't expect at the moment. So has anything been happening recently? This was all, what, several months ago. Has Free Radio been doing its tabling without harassment?
Yeah, we've been tabling, not as often due to weather and due to lack of energy from a lot of the programmers that are doing all the work. But, you know, hey, you know, we get out there as often as we can when we have the energy and we have the resources to make literature copies and have T-shirts available for donations. But we have to move away from Hippie Corner now because they have started building, and they have blocked the sidewalk with a big fence, and it's an obstruction. You can't walk by there anymore hardly, and it's like it's a real mess downtown, I think, with all these construction sites. There's nowhere to practice your First Amendment rights, and that goes for all the street musicians as well. They've, you know, there's hardly anywhere that you can set up a guitar and play now where it's legal to do so, and that's the way they want it. That's exactly how they want it. They want it a very sterile, sanitized downtown. And that's one of the these are the laws that they, you know, that they've enacted to keep it that way and to infringe on our rights to organize and to speak freely.
True enough, although I don't think that we have to sit down for this, or maybe stand for this, if you will. That was our slogan in 1994 when we fought the downtown ordinances, which of course involved the sit on the sidewalk, go to jail law. We had a button that said, downtown ordinances, we won't stand for them. Got another call coming in here.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Interesting that you should bring up street musicians of all things. No, I haven't been able to call your show in a year.
Well, it's good to hear you again. You must be one of those notorious street musicians yourself.
Always listening and, you know, always wanting to call, you know, first-time caller for the year.
Uh-huh.
I've been approached by officers of late on the mall. That new guy, I don't know, what's the new cop's name? Not the short, dumpy one, but the skinny one that barely fits into his bulletproof vest.
That's badge number 132, Officer Northrop.
Northrop, that's him, yeah. Northrop, he has come up to me of late and tried to keep me, let me see, how do I say that? He's trying to use panhandling ordinances in reference to my street music. He showed me a section that apparently said that I couldn't stand against this piece of building in his mind, this piece of building that, you know, I've been standing up against since it became a building. It's one of the buildings that they came and built expressly to drive away the street people on the mall.
What building is this, Phil?
That's the Rainbow. Oh, what is it, the Rainbow Cafe one there?
Ice Cream.
The UN Trinket Store?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's for people that don't remember, I remember when they first put that building up. Nobody wanted a building, and nobody was going to rent a building, but then they decided they're going to just develop these areas anyways in hopes to solve the problems downtown, and the renters would follow. And so, yeah, the UN Trinket Store followed. So I like to play by the UN Trinket Store. And hadn't had a problem with any of the officers except for this Northrop guy. And he came up and was going to give me a ticket in regards to this municipal code that he showed me. And the municipal code he showed me was aggressive panhandling. And I'd like to hear you rant a couple minutes on what the difference is between those. I know those differences were pretty well established several years ago in this town.
Well, I probably...
I'll take my answer off the air.
Sure, thank you, Phil.
That, of course, was musician Phil Free, who is both a composer and a musician and can be found down on the mall, who knows, any old time.
Today.
Probably today, strumming away, possibly in front of Double Rainbow up near, I guess, Logos Bookstore, that general area. I encourage you to go and check out his music. Throw him quarters and dollars if you like it, tomatoes if you don't. You know, I mean, that's the way it works. Anyway, the question he asked is a really is an important one. I'm hoping what I'll be doing is, I was talking and Phil expressed an interest in this. He was one of the callers later last week about my project Know Your Rights, which has to do with just this question: what are the downtown ordinances, and what do they permit and what do they prohibit? The downtown ordinances are unconstitutional, in my opinion, but they still exist. These were laws passed by the city council in 1994. Essentially to trash homeless demonstrators who were concerned about the sleeping ban, and we're still concerned about the sleeping ban, the law that makes it illegal for people to sleep outside, anywhere and everywhere, in a vehicle or other than a church parking lot. And only, you can only do that if you have a vehicle, and there are three vehicles and so forth, and very few churches let you do that. So 95% of people sleep illegally every night. City Council didn't like the protest. They put in the downtown ordinances. And one of those ordinances was an aggressive panhandling law. Now, there has been a state aggressive panhandling law for some time, but that has been in a somewhat problematic status because in San Francisco, a federal court found it was unconstitutional, or actually it tossed it out at one point. That was put on hold, and it really is still uncertain what the status of that federal law is. When I talked to public defender Ed Chun a month ago after he appeared before the Citizens Police Review Board to advise the board what the rights are of another guest coming into the studio. So cool. No, he's a mystery guest. He's sneaking away again. But he's got his own tape, and he'll be doing a show later. Great speaker. Anyway, getting back to this issue. Panhandling tickets have not been prosecuted for quite a while. They have happened. For example, Skidmark Bob Duran has another street musician and composer, as well as a Food Not Bombs worker and Free Radio Santa Cruz collective member, has had actually a panhandling ticket issued to him. The panhandling law in Santa Cruz, essentially, it's a rather complicated and lengthy law, and I'd like to bring it in and actually make copies available, and that's really what the listener, that what Phil needs and others who perform on the street to know what their rights are, the copies of these laws. Although police can violate the laws at will, as they did with me. I showed the law to the officer. He didn't care. He gave me a ticket for leaning, although there's no leaning crime. Anyway, the panhandling law, to finally get around to it, Phil, parts of it that I'm aware of, and there are more parts than I'm aware of, so that's the reason I'm kind of fudging on this. It makes it illegal to panhandle, that is to say, peacefully ask for anything of value from a seated position in a group of two. I think it's within 10 or 15 feet of a doorway. I'm not sure exactly on that. It's also within a certain distance from a crosswalk, which is a sort of a strange requirement. You can't do it at all after dark. You can't do it to or from a vehicle. And all of these restrictions are lifted if you don't say anything. Hence, you can sit with it wherever you can sit down legally with a sign. You could, for example, sit near a crosswalk with a sign. You could sit after dark with a sign in an area where you could sit, although there are many areas downtown where you can't sit. For example, you can't sit anywhere along the street. Along the shops, up and down the mall. That's completely illegal now. That's why what Vinny was saying about the mall being developed, I guess you were also saying it, Phil, if you're listening, that is removing areas of public space for people to be in, whether they be street musicians, whether they be homeless people sitting down, whether they be elderly people who come out of the hotels and don't have space to sit on the benches or money to spend in the cafes. So it's a real serious issue. And the best I can tell you is, again, I hope that we can get some volunteers to work on this Know Your Rights project, which we'll talk about, we'll hopefully reprint the greatest hits from the downtown ordinances that make it illegal to sit down, make it illegal to have a display more than 6 feet tall, make it illegal to peacefully ask for spare change after dark, and so forth. But we'll also have discussion of issues like what is a detention, which is what Vinny was subject to when he was getting his ticket. And I sound like an expert. I am not an expert. I am an individual who simply talked to a lot of different people. This is really, and even lawyers aren't experts on this, because the final decisions are made by judges, and ultimately the final decisions are made by the people. Because in 1994, as many may remember, we had this very draconian law, the sitting ban, which was even broader than it is now, which anywhere, sitting down anywhere downtown, period, not on a bench or at a pay cafe or, you know, an emergency spot of some sort because we have a medical crisis, was illegal. And people then came out in droves by the dozens to sit down, and they did. They were arrested, and they were arrested, and then finally they stopped arresting them. There were too many of them. Then the police rioted, broke one man's ribs, caused a miscarriage to a woman. The whole issue was ignored by Mayor Kennedy. You may remember Mayor Kennedy. That's the main hitman against Celia Scott, who now is in some disrepute, and who may not make his campaign for whatever he's running for next. May even have trouble keeping his guru seat on the Resource Center for Nonviolence. Hard to tell. I don't want to sound bitter. I hate politicians who are hypocritical, and I think we need to oust those people from positions of power. I don't mean we don't need to lynch them. We don't need to badmouth them in their family life. They may be fine people as individuals, but they do not deserve, nor should we give them the power to have this kind of position over us. That's what's really important to get across. Anyway, the downtown ordinances are going to be part of this Know Your Rights project, as are state ordinances regarding panhandling, as are your civil rights remedies on a federal level. We need to get together a pamphlet on this issue that folks can look at. I actually tried to get what's called the cheat sheet book that the cops use as they walk around downtown when they give you these tickets, and they won't let you see it. It's incredible. They are consulting a list of ordinances that they will not let the public see, and Sergeant Crane refused to show this to me. I don't know if it's still the policy of keeping it a secret. I asked the hosts. They wouldn't show it to me, and I'm sure they have access to it because the cops operate out of the hosts' headquarters. The hosts, for those of you who are listening who don't know, are green-shirted kind of para-police group that walk around with... Well, he will incur my wrath, and I will speak just as strongly against him as I would against any other informant, because that's what these hosts are. We have an incoming call. I hope that kind of begins to answer your question, Phil. It really needs to be answered through more work, and I can talk to you more about that off-air. Give a call to 423-4833.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Well, that seems that that individual has some kind of a problem, but not quite sure what it is. Perhaps good luck to you, whatever's going on there. I'm going to turn now to another issue, because I kind of like to cover a variety of issues in the show. Vinny, is there anything you want to say before we move on?
Actually, no, I had to run. I just wanted to sign off, say goodbye. Thank you for having me on your show, and I'll be tuning into the rest of it.
All right.
Have a good day, y'all.
And hopefully you'll come back with a further report on how things went on the court and the new court date you have.
Yeah, I will definitely keep you posted on that. You can tune into my show on Wednesdays at 9 p.m. to find out some more about this issue, or I'm sure Robert will be kept up to date on the information as it develops.
Hey. Thank you, Vinny. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM in Santa Cruz. You're tuned to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadsides with Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse. That's me. Why the bathrobe? Well, that's what I wear when I go to sleeping band demonstrations to dramatize that folks who are outside have no legal place to sleep. This issue isn't just one that folks on the fringe rave about and rag on. People in positions of some knowledge and authority, like Paul Brindell of the Community Action Board, have recently, Paul for several years has been an outspoken opponent of the city's sleeping ban. He's spoken about that at city council. He's issued statements about it. And recently he appeared on the Eric Schecht show on KSCO. And Eric Schecht, we didn't catch the whole show, but we caught the sort of the last part of it. And Paul has some interesting things to say about the sleeping ban, and I'm going to let him do the talking. And remember, if you want to call in, you can give a call to our phone number here in the studio, 423-5361. You probably should wait, however.
Only around 7%. So that's an interesting, another, the point in time is that 3,000 to 3,500. That's a point in time indicator. How many are right now homeless? But if you look at a period of time, like the United Way did, and you say of all your population, how many have? It's significant to say between 3 and 7% have been homeless.
We're speaking with Paul Rishi Brindell. He is the program director for the Shelter Project, part of the Community Action Board of Santa Cruz County. It says that there are as many beds as possible for people in the community. Let me ask you a loaded and kind of hot political question. There's a camping ban in a good part of this county, is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
The city of Santa Cruz has one. Does the county as well?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I've always thought, well, I can understand a camping ban if there were places available for people who had nowhere to live.
Mm-hmm.
But if there are not adequate beds for people who have nowhere to live, how can you justify a camping ban?
Well, I don't think you can, really. And it's funny, it's more than just a camping ban, it's a sleeping ban.
Well, that's the camping is a bit of a euphemism. Yeah,
you can't sleep.
Camping makes it sound like you have a stove and
a blanket ban. You can't lie down, put a blanket over you, and close your eyes and fall asleep.
I guess if you sat up.
No, you got to be walking around. You see, this is... CAB's position is that it really is inappropriate and unconscionable to have in place a camping ban, which keeps people from sleeping, which is a natural human function. You can't live without it. That it is part of life to sleep. And if you don't have the resources in your community for poor people to sleep, then how in good conscience can you make it a criminal activity for people who have to sleep in public? Because if you can't in private, because you can't afford to rent it.
I have no answer for you. I mean, I have none at all. I just, I didn't realize that the discrepancy between the beds and the number of homeless was so vast.
I think, politically, it's just very difficult for any one community to make that kind of a stand. And that this is slowly moving its way up to the Supreme Court. And at some point, the Supreme Court will look at sleeping bans and say, well,
do you have the constitutional right to sleep?
Yeah.
Well, the Community Action Board concludes, it says in the survey, that while it is important that all homeless people be sheltered, those people considered to be the most vulnerable and at risk should be sheltered first, including elderly people, families with children, disabled people, ill or injured people, and pregnant women. So the issue of vulnerability, given these limited resources, I guess, is critical here.
Well, this leads to, there's no way to get away from it. You can't escape it. It's a lifeboat metaphor.
It's triage, as they say in the medical community.
I think, except in triage, I'm playing more with the lifeboat, because if you have X number of people who simply can't find a place to legally be, I look at a ship that's sinking as that, and you have a limited number of lifeboats, and those are the shelters. Who gets to get into the shelters?
So women and children first, to finish your metaphor there.
Yeah.
With the lifeboats.
And injured and ill people and elderly people, disabled people.
There used to be some kind of a program, Paul, that also made motel rooms available on some kind of a short-term emergency basis. Is that still around?
Yeah, we do that.
That's part of the shelter project.
That's part of our program. We do the...
Is this part of the number of beds we just...
No, no.
So
no,
that looks like your safety valve?
No, it's just a medical emergency. This is to keep the bodies off the street. We will house somebody in a motel if they're coming out of a hospital, having spent at least a night in the hospital, or if they have active TB or infectious hepatitis, and they shouldn't be on the street or in a shelter because there are now strains of TB that are resistant to all antibiotics, and we want to be absolutely clear and careful about keeping those people isolated and away from the rest of us, all of us. So we make certain that they have public health nurses. Each is on a caseload of some public health nurse through the Homeless Persons Health Project. So no, that's not, it's not a safety valve. It isn't going to put everybody up who can't get into a shelter. It's just those people who are ill or injured or contagious that keeps them until they're okay to go back out on the street or into a shelter.
This must be awfully hard work for you. I mean, on one level, given the level of need and the ability to respond, there's enormous frustration and sadness built into this work, as well as, I assume, the senses of accomplishment for what you do. You know what I mean? In both ways.
You're right. And when, you know, I've lost my pace once in that 14 years. If you do this as a profession, you have to pace yourself. And only once, shortly after the earthquake, did I lose that pace and got very sick. So generally, I'm fairly able to steward my own personal, spiritual, and health resources in order to keep this going. But, you know, I look at, it's really good work, Eric. I'm really incredibly blessed to be able to do this kind of work and get paid for it. And I look at it that way. And the position I'm in, you can really help people. Mm-hmm. And sure, there are 10 times as many people to help. That doesn't take away from it that we're really making a difference. And we know that on a day-to-day basis. I also get to do analyses and hold up a survey like this and say, for crying out loud, look at this. This is wrong. We should change it. So I get to play with policy development. And so, yeah, you're right. It's very sad. But what else is new? You know, I mean, that's the world is like this.
Okay. I can't disagree with any of what you said. It does bring to mind, and this is one of the questions I have in an ongoing debate. Our nation's wrestling with it in terms of political philosophies and the like, what the government can and can't do versus what volunteers, private organizations, churches, and the like can do. It strikes me this question no better addressed than homeless issues, because you have a lot of players in terms of the response here, and maybe government can't do it all. Maybe the conservatives are right that this needs to be, you know, an endeavor the whole community responds to. On the other hand, we have a huge overwhelming need here that's not being addressed. Let me ask, for instance, about how the churches are involved, because there is this satellite program, correct? Talk about that a little.
We could not begin to serve folks without the involvement of the churches and the synagogue. It's remarkable, the interfaith approach to sheltering people through this prime emergency shelter that we have here, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. Remarkable.
How does that work?
People. They pick people up down near the River Street Shelter every day. People are fed, and then they're taken out to one of the churches or to the armories when they're opened, and they get a blanket and a mat, and it's warm. And they sleep until they get up very early in the morning, and then they're driven back downtown and dropped off. And that's done both in Watsonville and in Santa Cruz. Remarkable program.
And you have all different kinds of churches in the synagogue involved.
Lots and lots. And the church congregations make the food and serve people the food. You know, I mean, people get involved in it. But this issue, and I know we don't have much time, of whether or not charities can really pick up the ball as we lose these entitlements. The United Way and the Salvation Army have absolutely explicitly said, we can't do it, don't expect us to be able to. It won't happen. We will be overwhelmed. And I think that that's true.
Well, when the largest private charity providers are saying this loud and clear, Catholic Charities have been saying this for several years.
Right, Catholic Charity.
We cannot meet the demand if the government gets out of it. I mean, I guess it's not a black and white issue. We really need to talk about a partnership on a variety of levels. And as you said, you couldn't do it without the support of the churches and the satellite program. And they can't do it by themselves either.
We couldn't do it without the churches. We couldn't do it without the funding that we get from the federal government and the state government and the cities and the county. And the donations that come in from caring people. We get fully a third of our funds for operations from anonymous, very, very wealthy people.
Really?
Yes.
They just send it to the shelter project.
Yeah, they have their accountants call us, and we work it through. And we couldn't operate without them.
Well, I'm guessing there are a lot of people listening tonight, most of whom probably aren't wealthy, but that's not a criteria, is it?
No. We're right now going into a major,
obvious question here.
Major fundraising effort right now. We really are going to have some difficult with the medical emergency motel voucher program coming up in the middle of the winter. We just will not have the funds to keep doing it. And so we're starting a fundraising drive now. And so anyone who wants to
launch
put in
it, launch it
$10,
here.
$20, or $100,000, whatever.
Yeah,
it would be very, very helpful to send it to CAB, Community Action Board, 501.
I was hoping you'd get to this.
Soquel Avenue, Suite E, Santa Cruz 95062. Or just call, if you didn't get that, call 457-1741.
And they can put down that they want to go to the shelter project.
Yeah, say shelter project.
I'm going to repeat it. It's Community Action Board, 501.
You're listening to Paul Brendel doing a little poverty pimping there. Actually, he's not doing poverty pimping. He's actually seeking money for programs that are good, and we're going to talk more about that. This is a rebroadcast unauthorized from KSCO.
Public health nurse there. This is basic emergency shelter for people that are injured, ill, contagious, and we've got to keep that. Somehow we've got to keep that one going.
You know, just a week ago, I was... privileged to have a conversation with Ralph Abraham and Paul Lee on a very different subject about utopia
right.
and ideal society.
Yeah.
But
right.
but Paul Lee talked about walking by a homeless man in the bowels of the London subway who was hacking himself to death and how he didn't stop and help this guy and how it haunted him.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, most of us are very good people, Paul, in the sense that we wouldn't really probably walk by someone who was ill. Paul was of a good conscience enough that it really animated him into social action. But here we're talking about people who may not be on our front doorstep, but they're in our world. They're in our community.
They're in every community, every downtown. And, yeah, people have gotten used to it, and all too often people step over folks or ignore folks.
I know there is this concern. Maybe you don't want to give people money directly downtown. You're not sure what it'll be used for, or if the need is as obvious as it might seem at the moment. And that's why organizations like yours, I think, are the alternative that people might want to seek out, because the money's going directly to the needy and the most vulnerable, and it's going to an organization that'll see that it gets delivered.
Mm-hmm.
So, Community Action Board, 501 Soquel Avenue, Suite E, Santa Cruz, 95. Repeating that.
Thank you.
Paul Brendel is the program director.
Didn't mean to allow so much of a commercial announcement. I think it's fine to give money directly to people on the streets. I think that it's also okay to give money to social service organizations. Frequently, that money gets lost in administration or goes to salaries. Folks who work at Community Action Board do get salaries, and not that they shouldn't, but the money has to pay them. So if you want to feed homeless people, you might want to, you know, buy them some bread and peanut butter, which is what I do when somebody asks me to get them something to eat. You know, or join a group like Food Not Bombs, which serves 4 days a week, Saturdays and Sundays, 1 o'clock at the town clock, Wednesdays and Thursdays, I believe it's 4 o'clock now. And their phone number is 425-3345. But Paul, I have some positive things to say about. I like him personally. We've had our ups and downs in the past. He actually had me arrested in 1988 when I slept in at the River Street Campground, which is now, I guess, community house property or thereabout, near there. We were trying to get the sleeping ban lifted. And in 1989, we sat in his office to get the armory opened up. He wouldn't do it. And then in 1990, he had me blocked from the... He was one of the main people who had me essentially barred, as well as other activists who were with me, from the Committee for a Safe Place to Sleep, a Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep, which tried to set up a campground and failed, and what did succeed in sabotaging demonstrations and protests. That was the darker side. Then he became much more positive in my perspective on him. He began working with video. He did some fine videos of the Union of the Homeless, which formed in 1992. He had a radio show called Something Better and had various homeless activists on it, including myself, concerned about homeless stuff in other cities. We were working on a lawsuit then to end the sleeping ban in a number of cities, which actually had a very positive result, but then got overturned by the California Supreme Court in 1995. He did a fine video around the sitting ban, which when the demonstrations had happened in Santa Cruz, videos you can still see being rebroadcast on either Channel 71 or Channel 72. He had the courage to speak up against the sleeping ban and has done so recently in terms of written material before City Council. When we had our demonstration early this year in 1997, we had a large demonstration at City Council. A lot of folks spoke. And he's taking the sleeping ban to CAB, Community Action Board, to talk about it there. And as you can hear, he's talking about it publicly on the air. He's articulate. He's commendable in that respect, and I want to thank him for doing that. He's also held open hearings of the Community Action Board, not enough, but hearings at which, for example, last spring it was brought out that the Homeless Community Resource Center wasn't feeding junkies. They were barring certain classes of people or individuals because of drug problems, not because they were a behavioral problem at meals, but because of either because of a personal thing with some of the staff or because of drug usage in the areas. And this was a matter of some concern to activists like, dare I say his name, Rolling Thunder Mike, who was concerned about the issue and spoke about it publicly and spoke about it quite eloquently. And a number of homeless people actually spoke up about a number of issues at these CAB hearings, and I wish that homeless people were invited more regularly to CAB hearings all the time, every month, because they should really have a much more significant part to play in the shelter project and other groups. Paul has set up a phone service through some of that money that he mentions that comes in, where homeless people have phones, or they can get a voicemail, I should say. And you can contact him about that at 457-1741, which is the Community Action Board, on a weekday. Possibly there's a message line on a weekend if you want to give him a call at 457-1741 and look for a message phone area if you're message phone line if you're homeless. That's a service that CAB has been helping with, as well as, of course, the other services you heard mentioned. So it's a mixed bag. I don't frankly kiss anybody's ass on this stuff, but I really appreciate seeing the whole picture, and Paul's been doing some very good work recently. I want to commend him for it. Even though he doesn't like it when I call him Panda Bear Paul Brindell, I kind of think he has that aspect to him, and I like what he's been doing, and I hope he continues to do it. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is your host, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norse, and you're listening to Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside Civil Rights for the Poor for the next, hour and a half. If you stay with us, you can actually join us for the first time on the phone. You have comments to make at 423-5361. We have one guest who wasn't able to come in today, but I hope we'll be calling in. Hapless Harry, I call him. He was a man who got a very strange reception from the Seaside Goon Squad, as I call them. These are the security guards that Canfield's Boardwalk hires to keep the money flowing out there. And I'm hoping he's going to call in at 423-5361 to talk about his situation. Wait, it could be him right now.
Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon.
Is this Hapless Harry?
It is.
Hapless Harry. Now, of course, that's not your real name, is it?
Oh, no.
Are you prepared to go public yet?
Almost.
Okay. Well, we hope that you will, because I think you'll feel better about it, and then we can track you down and arrest you again.
Yeah, and again and again.
What happened at the boardwalk that, was it an August day or a July day?
It was June 24th. And basically what occurred, I was going to the boardwalk to play a couple of video games, and I had locked up my bicycle at the bike rack there and extricated myself from the bicycle after locking it and looked up and saw this sign that says, "No bikes, rollerblades, or skateboards allowed. Will be confiscated by the Seaside Company for a period of 72 hours. I was curious about that sign, so I'm going in the door, and there's three security guards standing there, two of which are detaining a young lady, one of which was standing 6 or 8 foot back with his arms crossed, watching the detainment there. And I said, "Excuse me, may I ask you a question?" He said, "Sure." I said, "I noticed that sign over there you have that says no bikes, skateboards, or rollerblades. I've never heard of a corporation taking people's property. How does that work?" And he said, "Well, this is private property, and We get to dictate what goes on here, and if you use these devices on the property, we will take them from you for a period of 72 hours if you want to stay on the property, or you can take them with you and not come back for a calendar year with a trespass warning. Now, that being relatively complex, I said to him, so if I'm hearing you right, what you're saying is, and I basically repeated back to him what he said to make sure that I had understood it correctly, which if you go back in my personal profile back to special ed in sixth grade, I have a hard time with written instructions that are not defined. You know, it's been that way for me for 20 years, and,
You're hapless, all right.
Yeah, no kidding. So, you know, I just wanted to find out what to do. So, as I'm repeating back to him what I thought he said, one of the other two officers that I wasn't even talking to said, well, if you don't like the policy, you can just leave. I said, well, I don't have a problem with the policy. He said, I told you to leave. I said, well, if you treat me like that, you're right, I'm going to leave, but I need my bike. He said, no, get across the tracks right now or you're going to jail for trespassing. This was officer hold on that 1 second there. There's a little loud traffic. Officer Merritt of the Santa Cruz Beach Boardwalk security people. So he said, no, leave now or you're going to jail. I said, look, you moron, you cannot take my bike. And then they, three of them grabbed me, threw me down. They dragged me 6 foot, ripped a hole through my jeans. My knee started bleeding. They took me off, dragging me by my arm with my shoulder being injured from being in handcuffs. I never displayed an active, aggressive bone in my body. I was completely docile and backing away from these people when I was thrown to the ground because I did not like the fact that my bike was taken. So now, I get really emotional.
Well, understandably.
It has adversely affected my entire life. 3 days after this event, I had my first juried art show in Monterey that I was welcome to as an artist. I spent the 3 days prior to that art show going to the researching penal code, countercharging them with assault, going to the lawyer and trying to find out what to do there, and going to the hospital and getting myself looked at. I went to this art show that hundreds of dollars had been paid for to get into, and I had no art made because I'd spent all my time trying to deal with this BS, and my shoulder was goofed up. So I'm down there at the art show, right? I go down there, I set up anyway. I got practically nothing. I'm making what I can with my arm in a sling, and the canopy that I'm underneath blows over and bends the legs on the canopy because I didn't have weight on the legs because I couldn't put weight in the bags to go on the legs. So I look like a buffoon. It's my first art show. 3 days after that's over, we got the big Hollister motorcycle rally, huge event up there, prepaid thousands of dollars out on the line. There I am with my sling. There I am with no real stock or product made. Completely, you know, again, just a difficult and hard event. But what has happened from this is my business has fallen apart. My partnership that I had with someone that was going pretty well up until this event, or at least, you know, making progress, has completely fallen apart. I'm faced with a tens of thousands of dollar bill as a result of this. You know, I currently have a large amount of responsibility placed on my shoulders, actions that I'm supposed to complete that I am not in a mental or physiological state of mind to be able to do. People have to understand that when you've been sleeping in your clothes for 15 years, 15 years I've been sleeping in my clothes every day, 15 years. So they think they know what it is I got to do. I don't think they know. Do they want to call me homeless? That's BS. Because I'm home full. I'm at home wherever I'm at. And I don't need four walls to be at home. And I don't need somebody's permission to exist as a person.
So what you're saying, Harry, is that you you actually are a person. You live in your vehicle, right?
I have. I've been on the road by myself since my third set of foster parents kicked me out when I was 16. I'm 29.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I got a bedding ticket 2 days ago.
That's part of the sleeping ban ticket, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the officer approached the car, banged on the window, get out of the car. I put my hands immediately in plain sight. I immediately opened the door, kept my hands in plain sight. He said, get out of the car. I said, may I put my boots on? He said, get out of the car. I said, the ground's wet, sir. I don't want to stand on the cold ground. Get out of the car. I'm going to pull you out of the car. I said, hey, look, man, I just want to put my boots on. He said, get out of the car. I'll pull you out of the car. I said, you can't treat me like that. I got this all on tape, by the way.
Good.
You know, the officer being abusive, he tells me to shut up. The officer, it's just like they need to learn to deal with people as they would want to be dealt with. That is the secret crux to the whole thing, is that they walk around and shit on people, and then they expect for us to just sit there and eat it.
And say, thank you very much.
Exactly. It's right. Not right.
Incredible.
So So here's my recourse at this point. I want to get out of here. That's what they want. They want me to leave. Well, you know what? I want to leave. I've paid hundreds of dollars to this city as a result of these tickets that are complete BS. You have a hard time dealing with it in a rational manner, and I realize it's not a simple issue, and I realize for everything that I think is screwed up, somebody else thinks it's great, so there is no definitive.
Oh, I would, on the other hand, think your anger is, quite justified, and that, what you need is support for yourself in the sense that understanding that you're not alone in sharing this kind of abuse, and I guess you were telling me earlier that you've observed this kind of abuse happening to other people as well, right?
Oh, absolutely. I saw, your previous guest there get that first ticket for the over 6-foot display, and I was actually a little bit of an adjutant to that scenario, not intentionally, but I wasn't happy with what was going on, and I was not prepared to just, sit back and go, oh, well, and that's what they want, Everybody out there that goes, oh, well, what can I do?
Yeah.
The problem, what you can do is you can voice your opinion. What you can do is take some actions. Right now they have the leaning ban.
Yes, the leaning ban.
That is ridiculous. We need a lean-in. We need 1,000 people down there leaning all the time until they realize that that's an unenforceable law. It's complete. Yeah, this betting thing, by the way, the ticket for the betting, it's unconstitutional.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's an unconstitutional law. You cannot... It's life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, right? Well, part of life is sleep. If you don't sleep, you don't live. So how can they say that I can't sleep,
It's cruel and abusive treatment of people, no question about it. And it also makes no sense for a number of reasons. And, of course, you probably listened to my show in the past and certainly read what I've written.
Yeah.
Know that the sleeping ban, per se, is just... not just unconscionable, it's just sort of stupid. You're charging people money for tickets that they can't pay, and even if you say, oh, well, they can come do community slavery, which the court calls community service, they still have to keep coming back to town, and so the very people that this law is supposed to deter, it actually keeps around, doing these court-ordered things.
No, it's the cashiers, and, I am the person that was involved in the Scribner statue sitting ticket.
Oh, remind us of that, will you, Harry?
Yeah, well, so I'm sitting there, I'm drinking my coffee that I bought at Georgiana's Cafe less than 100 yards away. It's about 9:30 p.m. on a Friday night.
Now, this is a statue of Tom Scribner, the musical saw player in front of the bookshop Santa Cruz, right?
Yes, exactly. I'm sitting there, I'm drinking my coffee. I got my headphones on, I'm not talking to nobody, I'm not communicating. I got my little cowl over my head there, and I'm just sitting there drinking my coffee that I just paid money for, just like, 100 yards away, less than that. So I'm sitting on the statue, and Officer Headley and another officer walk up and say, well, you can't sit there. I didn't hear him at first because I had my headphones on, and I was looking down. I was not looking at them. So I pulled my headphones back, and I'm ready to receive your incoming communication. And he says, well, you can't sit there. I said, well, but I am sitting here. He said, well, I'll write you a ticket if you continue to sit there. I said, everybody sits here. He said, that doesn't matter. I'm telling you to move. I said, well, you better get to write it. Okay, so they wrote me up the ticket. Took 4 cop cars, 8 cops. I went a little bit ballistic in the verbal sense because they just continue to oppress and oppress. I'm an artist. I can't display my art. If I display my art, then I'm a criminal. And if you're a criminal, then you got... then they have future selective enforcement for you, so you get caught the first time. See, I happen to make little art objects. They're pretty well known, and a lot more well known lately than they used to be.
You going to go public with that now?
I'm not prepared to do that at this exact moment, Robert.
No problem.
I've got so many fires to deal with. I'm telling you, folks, I've received thousands of letters from people, and I got this mass mailing getting ready to go out, and I'm trying to figure out how to do it.
Let me interrupt you for a minute to say, Harry, that. You're not just some character ranting. I have actually been to your mailbox, and I have seen the huge box of mail that you took out of it.
Yeah, I got thousands of letters getting ready to go out, and I'm just trying to decide what I'm going to say in them. I don't want to defame the Seaside Company, but the fact is, they don't deserve any fame. I was thrown to the ground. I was hurt. My arm is goofed up. I probably have a torn rotator cuff in my shoulder as a result of the negligence and abuse of that company. I don't recommend people spend money there. I don't recommend people go by there. I don't recommend people even walk near there, until, at the very least, they change their policies where their security responds to violence only with violence, and they all undergo mediation training. And these people are, I think that a security guard, because you're put in that position of authority, even though you don't really have authority, it's a private authority, they probably wouldn't hurt to have some counseling once a week. Go in once a week. Let's talk about our authority issues, you know. Do you have a hard time, Officer Merritt, or, you know, and they think they're cops. You know, I'm riding my bike. I could go on and on and on and on.
There's another instance that happened that you were about to mention?
Oh, yeah, I was talking about nonstop. We were talking about the statute,
mm-hmm.
Okay? So I was sitting there. They wrote me the ticket. I go show up in court. It's not just me. You were there. Tom Noddy showed up.
Yes, I was.
And he testified that Tom sat on the statue himself when it was put up in 1978, right?
Tom Noddy is a bubble player and actually one of the two or three individuals who were behind the street performers guidelines that supposedly regulate street performers, which is in essence, rather than laws that oppress you, you're supposed to sort of a voluntary process of cooperation with guidelines. So Tom was very concerned about your case. He testified on your behalf, pointing out that sitting on Scribner's statue was customarily done, as Scribner himself would have sat on his own statue. He was not merely a musical saw player, but he was a revolutionary. He was concerned with basic human rights issues. He was a member of the IWW and a communist as well. So
you know, that one thing you just touched on there, which was this basic ordinance, which you mentioned in brief earlier, 95060, right? Conduct in public, you shall not sit, stand, or lie on any street.
9.50.020,
It's, don't sit, stand, or lie after being told by an officer on any street, tree, berm, utility fence, post, railing, cabinet, sculpture, monument, etc. Now, this falls into the category of statue or monument. And at the end of this, it says, unless designed or customarily used for these purposes.
Right.
So now, clearly, without any doubt, completely based entirely in fact, that statue has been customarily used for almost 10 years as something to sit on, mm-hmm. completely without doubt. So I show up with a letter from the bookstore, or from an employee of the bookstore that is familiar with me, from a letter from the cafe, a letter from the flower shop right next door saying it's customary use. People sit there all the time.
Mm-hmm.
I go to court, guilty. Now, that may have had to do with how I presented it. I realize
no.
I was not...
No. It had to do with the fact that you were in the court of Judge Meat Grinder Mulligan, which, yeah. By the way, I advise everybody, always disqualify referee Mulligan. He's a referee.
Cashier Mulligan. Cashier
Mulligan, yes. Excuse me. Well put.
He got my $197, you know? That's what it ended up costing me for sitting on that statue.
How much?
$197. $167 plus a $30 late fee. Hmm. But... You know, and I got to tell you completely honestly, it didn't actually cost me that. It cost my partner that, who I was working with in business, because it came up as a responsibility that I had to deal with. And the behavior of the law enforcement here, not allowing me to live as a dignified human being, has put me...
It's put your business relationship in jeopardy and put you in really difficult
situations.
Exactly. Situation.
This is a payphone and it wants more money, so I'm going to try to pacify it.
So we're on the line talking to Hapless Harry. You're listening to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. This is Bathrop Spears Broadside.
There we go.
Hi. Civil rights for the poor, and this guy on the line, Harry, you're poor, and we're looking at your civil rights, right?
Yeah, well...
Or lack of civil rights.
Yeah, or... See, I don't... you know, and I have to say that poor is maybe not the right... descriptive for me. What I definitely am is a...
You don't own a house.
Yeah, I'm a disadvantaged person. I don't have some of the advantages that others might have, although there are some advantages that I have that others do not have that I also recognize, one of which is extensive travel experience. You know, it's like I know this country. I've been in Florida, South Carolina, Virginia, Michigan, Missouri, and Colorado before I was 10 years old going to school, and I didn't stop traveling at 10. I kept going. So now I'm 29, and I've been on the road for 25 years, and they're going to tell me how to act like I didn't survive through downtown L.A. by myself, like I didn't survive through downtown, you know, Salt Lake or you know, wherever it is that you go. I've been all over the country, and I've never had the outpouring. As a matter of fact, of all the tickets I've ever received in my life, 95% of them have been in Santa Cruz, and I have spent... a small percentage of my time here. You know, my activities are not those that would attract major attention as a criminal. You know, I do not deal drugs. I do not steal, I do not, behave in a negative manner towards society. I'm trying to do the best I can with my tools, you know, but what it is that...
But you do attempt to assert your dignity when your dignity is being humiliated.
Yeah, well, right now, since this happened at the Seaside Company, I haven't had any dignity. I was thrown down in front of people. I forgot to mention that there were witnesses, four individual witnesses that stayed and waited after, and they will, you know, have and will collaborate the fact that I said, yeah, I'll be happy to leave. I just need my bike. And then I'm saying, no, leave now or you're going to jail. Let's talk about that. Okay, so I go to court, right? I got an arraignment. So I show up there, I got my legal counsel, and there, well, I'm sorry, here at the box, we don't seem to have this case on record. You're going to have to go up to the DA's office. I go up to the DA's office, and they're, we just don't seem to have a copy of this. There's no copy of the report, no copy of the ticket. You're going to have to call the police department. Call the police department. Oh, well, we don't have a copy of the ticket. What we have is a copy of the Seaside Company report, and that we can't find the ticket, but if you call back in a couple of weeks, you know, now it's been months. Okay.
So the ticket disappeared, is
that? Oh, absolutely, yeah. I went to court to my arraignment, and there was nothing there. So here's the thing. If I don't show up at court, it is a crime, and I'm going to jail. If they don't show up in court, oh, well, that's an inconvenience for you, sir. You're just going to have to deal with it. You know, we do the best we can with what we have. Well, if what you're doing with what you have is inept, you know, why? You know, anyway, so the fact is there still have been no charges filed. The DA chose not to take action on my assault charges against them in spite of the fact that I had witnesses. They chose not to contact my witnesses. They chose not to find out what actually happened there at the Seaside Company.
So, in other words, the Seaside Guards are sacrosanct, but citizens can be roughed up at will by them. They can charge you with bogus crimes of asking a question about a bicycle. But
yeah.
when you attempt to counter this by getting the DA to really look into a case of assault, he's not interested. The police aren't interested. These are realities enough to drive a person to drink or rage. And I, you know...
Oh, I'm right at the rage part.
I hear you. And that's why we need each other in these situations to find some way to unite and change what's going on here. And I don't have all the answers. I'm kind of, you know, fumbling around with different things, a radio show, street newspapers, tabling on the streets and getting people together in organizations like Cop Watch. There's clearly no one answer to how to deal with this. But I think what you're really on the right track. When the first thing you do is you put the information out publicly, you determine you're not going to be bowled over by it, and also I think it's really important at this point to seek support from other people who are concerned about you personally.
Thank
and
you.
Care about what's happening to you as an individual, because this wears on you. I mean, I one can hear it in your voice. One can.
Oh yeah, I'm on the brink. You know, I've got a lot of people, you know, that want me to take action on their behalf that I'm not capable of taking right now because of my mental and emotional instability. And this comes as a direct result of a long, hard time on the road. It's not just the Santa Cruz Seaside Company. You know, I mean, that is one, that is the icebreaker, as it, you know, or the straw that broke the camel's back, in the sense that, you know, I'm a person who got into recovery. I'm a person who's maintained years of consecutive sobriety without drugs and alcohol. I'm a person who has, without a high school diploma, earned $30,000 a year and gotten an NASD broker's license and worked in the limited partnership field, you know. I'm a person who's worked door-to-door all across the country, through Texas, Florida, South Carolina, all over, knocking on doors, talking to people.
And you're a person who's gotten a lot of improper and abusive behavior from security guards at the Seaside Company, from police officers, from the Santa Cruz Police Force.
That is absolutely true. I have some legal challenges to work through right now as a result of what has happened.
Well, I hope you take these guys to court and sue their pants off.
It is my complete intention, focus, and ultimate goal to make sure that people are held accountable for what's happened.
Well, I think you should get some money for what happened to you as well. I think that they should pay restitution. The best way to make these cops change is take a big bite out of the city's pocketbook, because then the city will make these cops change. See, that's, I think, the answer. You have some changes, not a lot, in the L.A. police force because of a man with a video camera and another guy called Rodney King.
Yeah, so, that's my defense, by the way, is I carry a tape recorder at all times, period.
That's not a bad idea.
You got to.
I'm going to have to run on you now.
Thank you,
Harry. And
thank you for letting me voice my frustration. I feel better just having it out a little bit, and I'd like to commend you for providing a forum that is actually completely and thoroughly, totally available to people, in this particular call-in manner. But even more so, the fact is that organized, there's nothing that they can do to stop the people that just want common sense, laws, and rules. And that's the thing. Laws aren't laws, they're rules.
If you've experienced any problems like Harry has, you can give me a call at 423-4833.
Thanks, Robert.
And I'll get back to you on that. Thanks, Harry.
Have a great weekend.
You too.
And that was our our special call-in guest who couldn't come in, but he did call in. That was great. If you have, as I said, some advice, support, similar experiences to offer Harry or the listeners of this show, give a call to 423-4833 for a delayed contact later. Or if you want to be on the air directly, the call-in line is now open to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 423-5361, 423-5361. So, yesterday I went to San Jose because Food Not Bombs there, a local organization that distributes food to poor people in the downtown area, was being threatened by police with ticketing and, well, destruction. They were threatening to take the food, to remove the people, to arrest them. The same process happened in Santa Cruz in 1988 and 1989, and we got past it. Essentially because a lot of people showed up and said, good, arrest me. I'm going to cook again. I'm going to cook anyway. I'm going to go to jail if necessary. We're going to keep feeding people, whether politicians and merchants and police officers like it or not. Now, I'm not specifically trying to demonize these three groups, but they were the three groups who were engaged in trying to repress free food service in Santa Cruz. And are currently, these are the three groups that are going after homeless people in San Francisco and Golden Gate Park, not food service, but the right to sleep at night, the right almost to exist. I got an incoming call here.
Hi, Free Radio Santa Cruz. You're on the air.
Hey, listen, my dick man.
And the phone line is again open at 423-5361. What I'm going to play for you now is San Jose Food Not Bombs. San Jose Food Not Bombs feeding that happened yesterday. We were expecting that police might show up because they had the previous two Saturdays, but they didn't. And instead, we had a relatively calm and peaceful time. Folks came and ate. A lot of hungry folks in that St. James Park over there in San Jose. Let's hear a little bit about what was going on there.
Wolf, you're in the park. What's this about you heading for Oakland, Wolf?
I'm going to Oakland. I haven't been down to Oakland since I was 12 years old, and they locked me up for stealing bologna down there.
Sounds like bologna to me.
Yeah, it was. It was bologna. It was, and it shows me, hey, guys, you show going to jail, not to hang out with some kids that stole muglets from the church.
So what are you going up there for? What's happening?
I'm going to go protest against the police.
What's happening up there today?
Well, you got this brother.
Point out a flyer here.
Yeah, he's at Petersburg, Florida.
Seize the time. Uhura House, Chairman Emali Yeshitella.
Uhura Movement.
City of African Resistance, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Yeah.
Police brutality and murder every day. Children under vicious attack in the schools. Tax on welfare, out of control prison building. Sounds like California, man.
That's exactly.
What's the other side? This is 1 to 6, Uhura House, November 8th today.
Yeah.
What about Food Not Bombs? You're going to support us when we're...
Well, I guess, yeah, when I come back,
it should be happening in the next 10 minutes, actually, you know, when the food arrives.
Yeah, well,
so you got your Lennox, buttons
in, yeah. Yeah, Lennox wants to pick me up and take me up there, so I should have put up the flags since this morning here, but, you know, it's always, like, kind of weird in the park when you first get here in the morning, you know? It's like,
yeah, are you in this park much yourself?
Or? No, I just came here because this is the runway.
This is where you take off from?
Yeah.